Okay, here it is, Sunday, July 24, roundtable discussion, nice party. I'm Thomas Robb.
Jason Robb.
Rachel Pendergraft.
So, welcome everybody.
Another great day, another hot day.
Another hot day, humid day yeah. in the Ozarks.
Yeah, it's going to be a cool wave coming in, I think they said later on.
Cool of 90, maybe?
Yeah, I think it'll cool down to 90.
Yeah, well, that's good, that's good.
Yeah.
It was getting a little too hot in the 90s.
Well, the thing is, for people that are out west, they're like, ah, we have hot weather like that all the time. The difference is that we have the humidity.
Right.
Out west, because we've spent plenty of time out west, there's
yeah.
no,
yeah, I
there's
lived
no
out
humidity.
West.
Yeah, you're
yeah.
from Tucson.
Yeah,
90 degrees is comfortable.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, it's hot, but when you have that humidity, you're just sweating nonstop.
Well, we're sitting inside shape. Right now in an air-conditioned room, and we're still sweating.
Yeah, you feel that
air
that
conditioning
pressure.
Just won't even cut it.
Right. So, anyway. Well, I think what's on everyone's mind right now is the conclusion of the Republican National Convention, where Donald Trump accepted the nominee.
Yeah, what happened to get up there? He says, you know, I've been thinking. That I know we've gone through a lot of work here, but I just don't think I'm ready for this.
I don't think so. Lying Ted can have it.
That'd be kind of funny. No, I'm just joking. I'm just
joking.
Kidding.
I'm just joking. Yeah. But anyway, I watched it throughout the week. You know, not all of it because I was obviously at work.
Because you do have a life.
I do have a life. I have to pay bills. But I did watch it. It was interesting. One thing I did notice throughout the convention that the speakers here and there would comment about defending LGBT's
yeah.
rights, you know, yeah. and the protection. And you know that was done intentionally.
Sure it was.
In order to show that.
Slipping it in.
In order to show that they are, you know, not bigots and racists.
Well, and the thing is, the big financial backers, like the Koch brothers and stuff, that is one of the main contributors and backers of the Republican Party, that all of those people, they're all for gay rights.
Right.
And they're all for that type of language being implemented in the platform, which it wasn't this year, but they bypassed what the official platform is so they could stick it out there in the speeches.
Right.
And because they don't care about moral issues, they care about money issues.
Exactly. And so, you know, when they talk about, you know, closing the borders, you know, vast majority of everything we believe in, you know, closing the borders, bringing jobs back to America, America first, veterans, you know, protecting our veterans, getting back to or maintaining our morals, you know, all of that is what we have always been saying, you know,
right.
we've been saying that for decades, you know, and now they're just kind of getting on the bandwagon, but they do that, and then they'll slip in, you know, we need LGBT protection rights and stuff like that.
Q.
LGBTQ. That's
yeah.
right.
Well, you know, and you get some of those financial backers, and then they start thinking, goodness, we're going to lose this financial backing.
Right.
And we
so
can't
we
handle
can,
that.
We'll put that in, but we'll still maintain everything else.
Yeah. Or they'll say, we're still against it, but we'll allow it in just because we need the financial backing.
Right.
You know, that's how love of money is the root of all evil. You make a decision based upon money, and I mean, it slips in, and they then become, when you start allowing them in your presence, they're around you, surrounding you. And it used to be they were in the closet, so you didn't know who was, who wasn't. But now, the person who's adjusting your microphone, the microphone for so-and-so, you know? He's openly gay, and still need to create that a personal, emotional friendship with people. Because just because we recognize that homosexual sodom is a vile sin, we're not saying they cannot be personable, friendly
right.
people.
Exactly.
And you get somebody who's a sodomite, who's personable, friendly, conversationalist, nice fellow, caring, making sure that your shoes
helps
look polished.
People. Yeah.
Pardon?
It helps other people.
Yeah.
It's,
make sure your shoes
matter.
Are polished. Make sure there's the lint off your jacket. He's your wardrobe groom, you know, consultant. And he's a Jack, and he's gay. Then you create an emotional tie and bind with these people. And I'm not saying I would or you would, but for most people who are not on guard, that's what they do. That's why Huckabee, who says he's against gay marriages, same time turns around and says, I've got gay friends.
Right. And, or you had the guy
who... Yeah, what business does a Baptist pastor have having gay friends?
Exactly. Absolutely. Or you had the guy who's the president of PayPal who spoke, saying, I'm a proud, openly gay man. Yeah. And, but the thing is, what people don't understand is, even though they say that, they have an agenda.
Right.
And the agenda is to destroy Western culture, the traditional marriage. Everything we hold dear, they want to destroy that. Yeah. They're not going to say that. Oh, they're not going to say, oh, we want to destroy your culture and redefine the definition of morality and marriage and everything else. They're not going to say that, but that's their intent.
Well, these guys are pushing an agenda, and as they mount in power and their agenda becomes acceptance and they have the power, then they will be putting preachers in jail who speak out against sodomy. They will be doing it.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's all started, it started with the family, because even though you may end up with gay people that you work with or come into contact with and so forth, and they're nice people and this and that, it's all started with people finding, oh, I got my niece is gay, or my nephew's gay, or a cousin is, or a brother come out, or this or that, and families not standing up for the position of morality in Christianity, and stepping back and saying, I'm sorry, but that is at odds with the beliefs of this family, and you're not welcome anymore.
But that goes back to the churches then.
Right.
The churches said, if you act that way, then you are not being a Christian. You're not being loving and compassionate, you know. And we have to love the sinner. And they may be committing sin, but we still have to love them, embrace them, and show our love for them. So, you know, that opens the door for their acceptance into family social circles. Right. Because of the guilt trip that churches have placed upon people to allow this perversion in their home.
Well, you know, and speaking about, you know, that and the, you know, Republican convention, I know last week, Rachel, I know we had got a letter from a member who attended.
He's a delegate.
Delegate
there,
who
right?
attended. We're not saying which state he's from, but he obviously attended the convention, and he thought it was pretty interesting, you know, obviously seeing all the dynamics surrounding the convention. And I guess there was a couple times there was, well, while I was on TV, you know, couple of the protesters inside holding their flag,
right.
No races, no hate,
yeah.
You know, stuff like that. So even though you still have them promoting that,
right.
You know,
they're still
Donald Trump is still considered a white racist.
Right.
I mean, just because of the fact,
not by us, but by
the enemy.
Right. Yeah.
But I want to say, just because you saw on TV the people applauding Peter Thiel when he came out and said, I'm a proud gay man. There were many who were not applauding.
No, there
wasn't. So it was like everyone there applauded.
Right.
The cameras focused on that.
Right.
But this guy, one example, you know, he said, there are a whole lot of people who are not applauding. They were not happy with that.
Right.
You know,
and even though the ones that are applauding, they probably,
applauding, I'm proud American.
Yeah, deep inside, they still don't want their morality's changed, and they still don't want the culture to change.
They don't want the little
girls subject
to it. They
still don't want transgender people, or whatever you want to call them, going to bathrooms, you know, where little girls are at, or little boys. They still don't want that, you know. But they're clapping because it's kind of like the hype.
Yeah,
you know,
they play the game because he loves America, and we got to get Donald Trump in.
Anyway, the member who's a delegate, that was really interesting, you know, kind of explaining all the dynamics around it.
Well, and that I was mentioned also, that is something, each election we have members who are delegates who have attended the convention. If members will read their handbooks and get on board, that's one of the activities that we promote is not outright, you know, announcing your membership or anything like that, but just working within the Republican Party or one of the other parties. And because people always, doesn't matter who it is, people always need volunteers working within that. And, you know, you can make friends, you can help tailor different things, you can get into positions, even though you may not have an effect on a national convention or anything like that. It still helps move you in the right direction, especially when we see a move nationwide with more of an appreciation of states' rights. Mm-hmm. And the local, county, and the state campaigns are really where it's going to be at in the future, because we're going to see the demise of the federal government at some point in the future. It's just unsustainable, and we're going to see a move back towards a priority of state governments and state elections and states' rights. Well, so that's where members really have an advantage.
And I believe it's called the sleeper program.
Well,
that's why I call
it. Yeah, except the sleeper program, the name sleeper has been applied to Muslim terrorists.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So, but I know that tradition, but that we would call it, because people get inside, get involved in the politics, you know.
Just help, you know, steer the direction and, you know, you know, make friends, be a person of influence. You're going to find other people that agree with you, and you can, you know, gently move them towards the direction of the Knights Party.
And for the most part, people, if someone else is willing to do the work, they're going to let you do the work. And so if you're joining a party, a political party, like the Republican Party, and you say, hey, I want to get involved and start doing stuff, quickly people are going to say, yeah, you can have that position. Yeah, you can be that position, or you can have that position. And you quickly can rise up, just because for the most part, people are apathetic. They don't want to do it. And as long as someone else is willing to do it, they're more than generous. Let them do it.
Yeah, and what's interesting, and that's just a basic
human nature.
But the idea there is just a basic political concept. And even Miles Horton, who was the founder of the Highlander Folk School, who was a communist, he advocated the same thing. He said, and that's how they got it to go to the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party wasn't always evil like it is today, you know. And so that's how they moved into the Democratic Party. Then because people are looking for. People are basically lazy, and somebody's active, anxious, really do the work, get the job done. Well, let Jimmy do it, or let Jack do it, you know. And Jack and Jimmy are there actually Klan members or white nationalists or white Christian patriots, whatever term you want to use. And they're volunteering this or volunteering that. They're active here, active there. They're elected to precinct captain. They're elected to a delegate to the state convention. And he's a good Republican. Look how active he is. And so that's how it works. That's how this delegate here, that's how he's been doing for a number of years. So that is how it works, and it does work. And that's how even today you find in all your communities, where do you find those who are in the social areas? You find all your liberals. They're in the library councils. They're in the tourism divisions of the local areas. They're in the arts and
science.
They get into all those programs, the public service programs in a community, and your liberals always actively push themselves to become leadership of those organizations, chamber of commerce organizations in various cities and so forth. And that's how they operate. They've been doing that for a number of years.
Right, absolutely. Well, and even if you don't aspire to being a state delegate or things like that. Even small local positions. I know we've had a couple of members this year. One woman I can think of, won't mention her name, down in Texas. She did not win. She was only two votes shy of it was an early election for a county office. But she got a lot of support and different ones that she was able to, I guess you could say, select out that had she could tell had more similar beliefs. She's been sharing the Knights Party platform with them and so forth. So there's just different things like that that people can do on a local level also. And that helps give them a good experience. Sometimes people say, well, why aren't you running people for public office? And, you know, we have a very strategic way that we do things in the Knights Party and our strategy for the future and so forth. Resources are very precious, and the first important thing in a political campaign is public recognition. I mean, that's like number one, is public recognition, that people know who you are and what you stand for and what your platform is. So our resources are basically used for that first part of a political campaign. Later on, you can run people for office, but members getting involved on any any ticket of any other political party, that helps give them the experience, helps them exercise their talents and so forth, so that that can be utilized by the Knights Party when we feel that it's going to be beneficial. We're not going to, you know, there's so many different, you know, political parties out there that kind of say the same things that we say and so forth, and they run people time and time and time again. And basically what they're doing is they're building a legacy of failure. And we're not going to do that. We're going to put our resources in the public recognition aspect, the first phase of a political campaign. And then when we feel that it's viable and we can build upon a success and a successful campaign, then we'll do it. So right now is the time for members who aspire to that and understand, you know, that's why it's important, again, for people to get in there and read their handbook and primer and so forth. It's important for them to get involved in local politics and then always work with the national office and keep us informed about what they're doing. They're getting day-to-day practical politics practice.
Yeah, yeah. They do not have to join the Klan or the Knights and then just, you know, stand up the street corner the next day and say, I'm a member of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, and raise the flag and tell everybody. They can go about their business just like they were before. And because different people at different levels can do different things. Somebody who's owns a very successful business in a community, maybe a car dealership or something of that nature, or that fellow who is a head of the surgical department or medical department at a major university is a member. Those people cannot. Their jobs will be in jeopardy if they'll announce their membership. But they can use their influence. They can use their contributions. They can use their tithe. And they can then volunteer their place in the political structure and begin to mold and create and shape the direction the party is going in even if it's just in their small area. You can get a foothold and begin that process. And we want things done overnight.
Yeah, but just don't forget that you're a member of the Knights Party, because your affiliation with the Knights Party is very, very important, so that you understand what the long-term goals are.
Right. Yeah, just don't join the other groups and walk away from us. You know, because there are things that we can give some pointers in and so forth. And it helps you coordinate with others throughout the country. And so that's very important. But we can turn this thing around. Now, we're not sure how it's going to happen, turn around. We know the massive invasion of non-whites to the country is still growing. Trump may put a stop to that. An election by Donald Trump will serve to awaken a lot of people who then see the reaction of the non-white crowd. Because they will react.
Oh, they definitely will.
We already see the reaction now. If Trump gets elected, there's going to be a massive reaction from Black Lives Matter and that ilk throughout the country. That's going to drive more people to become awakened. And because the Republican Party does not have the answer, because nationally the Republican Party does not condemn miscegenation and could not, and obviously is not against sodomy. And those are the two issues, the very core of what we are. Right. And we are either white Christians and we are traditional normal Christians. And so this does help drive the narrative. So this battle isn't going to be won overnight. And people get anxious. They want to win tomorrow. If they don't win tomorrow, then they want to quit, figure out what's the use. But, you know, if you really feel that way, if you feel what's the use, then all you need to do is pick up your little baby, your little grandbaby, look in their eyes and tell them that it's just too much trouble. I mean, look in the eyes of your little grandbaby and say, I'm sorry, honey, it's just too much trouble. I'm going to go bowling tonight. Right. Because essentially that's what they're saying. Well, we had to take a little break.
We're going to take a little break. Technical error.
Anyway, we're talking about how your little babies, you know, tell them that it's just too much trouble. But I want to point out, Rachel, you mentioned it just a moment ago during our break, that there are also teenagers listening to this, and you're going to have little babies. You've got little boys, little girls, and little Timmy, little Susies, you know. And what kind of life are you going to be presenting to them? And I know this, I don't want us to think about it, but it's very important.
Well, we, you know, we get teenagers that join the youth corps, the Crusaders, and the Knights Party, and constantly they are concerned about their own future, and they're concerned about their family.
How are they going to make a living? Yeah, how the family will they have?
Exactly, and they're wanting to do something to promote this idea of turning America around again, because right. they did not personally grow up in the environment of the 40s and 50s and 60s when it was basically a white America. They didn't grow up during that time period, but they know that that's a time period that existed, and they want to return to that time period. They want to return to a time period when America was white and was Christian
and was safe.
Morally straight, right. Absolutely safe, you know, and so they want that, and they desire that, they hunger for it, and so they want to do what they can. And so white teenagers out there, if you're listening to it, to this program, and I know many of you do, your future is at stake. You know, your right. children's future at stake. Even though you don't might have any now, your children's future is at stake. And so you all can do something to help promote this, you know, this white Christian revival that we talk about all the time. And part of that is joining the Crusaders program, get involved in the Knights Party, because we do have a plan. We have a strategy in reclaiming America.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, as many of them, they've gone through these white privilege classes and seminars and exercises in their schools or in colleges and so forth. And you know, maybe they've got younger brothers and sisters that's going to have to go through the same thing. And will they make it out without being, you know, just burdened down with white guilt? You know, maybe you understand the problems. But what if you've got a younger brother or a younger sister, you know, are they going to be able to stand strong and get through this propaganda that's directed against them? So it's important for young people to, you know, look out for their siblings and their friends and so forth and help, you know, direct them and learn and help give them some tools and encouragement to, you know, get past that mind war that's being played on them.
Right. You know, and they can have even influence on their parents. Their parents may be sympathetic, but may not be members of the Knights Party, but doesn't mean they might not join. My own example, I was raised in a family that was very patriotic, very aware of what's going on, extremely so. You know, those who know my story are aware of that. And my mom and dad were very aware of the move toward liberalism and communism and so on. But the first organization that I ever joined was called the John Birch Society. And I joined it, and then my mom and dad, they followed. They joined after I joined. So it wasn't they were members that I joined because my mom and dad were. I actually joined the John Birch Society first, then they ended up joining after. So, you know, you can have a positive influence even on your parents, who may sympathize and be totally in agreement with you, but have given up hope. You can give them hope because they've been raised. You got to understand, kids, that your mom and dad have been raised for years in an era where we saw defeat after defeat after defeat after defeat. And many people who are in their 30s and 40, especially 50s, feel like hopeless, feel like it's over with, nothing just, they can do.
They've just given up. And
yes.
All they hope is that maybe you'll be able to get a degree or a good job and make enough money to just, you know, kind of get by. But as far as like having a moral community to live in, they've probably given up hope of that.
Right. Right. So kids can just, you know, have the youthful enthusiasm and have set on a bright future and how it can be accomplished, how it can be done. We can't allow the enemy to force us into this feeling of being defeated. And that enthusiasm and that hope that we can turn this thing around and reach out to our people can be a spark in the lives of your mom and dad so they can once again feel the kind of hope that they've had as a child but got beaten down because of the mess that's been coming upon us for the past 30 or 40 years.
Well, most – I don't want to say most. There's a large portion of parents who naturally just don't talk to their kids about – major issues about race, you know, and culture. Just they don't. They might have a hobby on fixing a car, hobby on some other type, and that's what they talk about. But know, the things that are really important about your race and your culture and your heritage, parents just, for the most part, don't talk about it. It's really unfortunate because that is the most important part. But if you kids are out there talking to that, to your parents, to your mom and dad, for the most part, they're probably going to be sympathetic. Mm-hmm. And that's going to start sparking conversations and interests. And that is
it could be your hobby.
It could be your the new hobby. And especially with what's happening now, where we see this hatred to the point where now blacks and your non-whites are actively going out and killing white cops and killing just cops in
what
general.
What about, was there a girl down in Little Rock just killed yesterday or something, Jason?
Three black teens in a Cadillac Deville drove up to a Sonic.
Was that Thursday? When, Friday? What day was it?
Friday.
Today for yesterday.
Drove up to a Sonic in Little Rock, ordered some food, and when the girl got out there with her food, they didn't even know who she was. They just opened fire on her and killed her.
Took the food and shot her.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so just
to have fun.
Yeah, because she's being white. And then there's another incident in Minnesota where you had these teenagers, 15, 16. They are non-whites. They're from some Middle East. They're recent children of refugees, so they don't come in the family. They've come there. They've only been in the state of Minnesota for a few weeks. And they raped a 5-year-old white girl, okay? Raped her, 3 of them. And so there are instances like
that. And so often their argument is, well, that's our culture. And then we're told by liberals, well, we have to understand their culture. Yeah. These aren't, and I don't know that they said about this incident, right. But I've heard them say about other incidents. They said, well, we got to have understanding and compassion on these people because they are in a different culture and they don't understand it. You know, their culture, things like that may be acceptable, and they don't quite understand our culture. In fact, Germany has a whole pamphlet they put together on that, don't they, Jason?
Right. Well,
helping to destruct new immigrants. Rape is not acceptable in our culture.
I don't think it's Germany, but okay. I'm sure they do. But I believe it's Sweden and I think Finland maybe. But one of those countries, they actually have pamphlets.
Oh, Sweden for sure.
Yeah, they have pamphlets and brochures to give to
provided by the government.
To provide by the government that rape is not an accepted culture because in the Middle East there it is, you know. But raping the women, the locals here, that is not considered acceptable. And so I'm thinking, why do you even have to tell people that's not acceptable?
Yeah.
You know? And so that's happening. So kind of getting back, you know, what we're talking about, that these are just examples that we hear about. Fortunately, we get to hear about it. But there's examples like that happening every day that's never making the news. And so, you know, the white parents out there, teenagers, they're talking to your white parents. That is going to spark interest. They're starting to see that. They don't. Your parents don't want to see that happening to you. You know, for the most part, parents want you teenagers to grow up and have a good job and have a good family and a good community. They want that. So if you're starting to express a desire for your people and your culture and your future, they're going to reciprocate that. They're going to want that, right. and that's what sparks the interest of talking about your concerns of your race.
Yeah, well, we were contacted a few days ago from a gentleman who's not even going to mention the state, but he's a U.S. Marshal. His 12-year-old white son has been bullied by a couple of the blacks in the neighborhood, and it's a nice neighborhood, so these aren't ghetto blacks. You know, they're in a nice suburban neighborhood, and his 12-year-old son was going out to check the mail, and they drove, they're like 16 years old or so. They drove over them and killed them. Just things like that. Or the white kid in Arkansas a few months ago, 18 years old, walking down the street, passing by a couple black kids that go to school with them. One of them actually happens to be the son of a deputy police chief in the city they're at. He's walked by him, walking his dog. Days, thousand times before, they are in his class, live in the same neighborhood. Well, that day, they decided to walk up behind him when he walked by with his dog and shot him in the back of the head and killed him. I mean, just things like that. Things like that happen so often that it doesn't even make the news because it's like, what are we going to, you know, spend two hours going over every black on white crime? That it's like it happens so often. It's like
it becomes the norm.
Yeah, it doesn't even get reported. It's not even newsworthy to the nightly news anymore.
Right. What about the white police officer up in those reported in St. Louis Dispatch?
Yeah.
I don't think Obama probably cares about it, but an off-duty police officer was home one night, and what do you know? He's pounding on his door, and the black guy tries to get in. The wife don't let him in. He comes around the backside and throws a block through the glass door, busts him, and the white off-duty police officer ended up having to shoot him. But now here's the thing: the guy was a fellow church-going member of his church. The white officer was probably evidently going to a multiracial church. There was a black guy that was his friend. They became friends. They sat there in the church together, and they sang their Father hymnal, and they, you know, they're buddies. They were buddies. They're friends. And they got a little discussion over the Black Lives Matter movement on the internet, and the black guy got irate about it. He comes with a 50-pound block throws it through the back door of the guy's home, and the wife screams and runs upstairs, and he comes lunging after his buddy. Yeah. And off to the cop, tries to tell him, back down, back down, back down. And he finally had to shoot him. And that was his church buddy.
Yeah.
They prayed together.
Yeah, last week, there's a white girl, I think she was 17 years old. I believe it was in Louisiana. Her and her boyfriend was white. They were leaving a convenience store. The boyfriend walked out first to the car. She was following behind. There's a group of four or five black teens that were standing there. They start grabbing at her and making sexual comments and, you know, vulgarity to her and so forth. And she turned around and said, you know, leave me alone. The boyfriend heard it. He come back. There's a scuffle. And they ran back to get in their car because other blacks in the parking lot were watching it. And they're all coming to, so they all gang up on these two white kids. And they did get away, but not before the blacks busted the window and were able to bust her face with a broken glass bottle. And
so she's a lucky one.
Yeah, her whole face is just cut up. Her lips, her teeth were smashed out. It's going to be
so like, they could have got a hold of her. She would have been dead.
Yeah, thousands and thousands of dollars and the pictures are just, I mean, her whole face and teeth are just like knocked out. And her lips are all sliced up and. Yeah, just trying.
But you know, some of the tells we're just being alarmist. We named five or six instances, but you know, of the 11 million blacks in this country, most of them are good church-going people and go to choir. And
that's what they say, right?
Yeah, and so you got a few incidences like that, but you know, that's not the vast majority of people. That's what they tell us.
And the the violence against the white girls is just growing and growing. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of
30,000 from white girls are sexually assaulted every year, according to the FBI.
Yeah, two more girls in LA Chief about 3 months ago. This was in Texas. They're at a fast food place, leaving through the drive-thru. At the two restaurants over was like a big rap fest type thing that was going on. Located across from a college, they're having some sort of black rap night or something, and the girls are like stopped at the drive-thru. They're like trying to exit the parking lot, you know, not at the same place, but you know, one parking lot over. You know, they're like restaurant next to restaurant and so forth. Anyway, and there's like black kids like meandering on over, spilling over into that parking lot, getting rowdy. And they start hollering at the girls when they were, like, waiting to get into traffic, you know, again saying vulgar crap and everything to them and stuff. And one of the girls yelled out and said, we don't date, you know, the N-word anyway, and took off. And a bunch of the black guys jumped in cars and took off and shot at them, ran them off the road, and shot one of the girls dead. And then they took off, and when the girls
and see a liberal would say, well, that's because they called them the N-word.
Yeah,
if they got it coming,
not because they were like trying to climb into the Jeep and sexually assault them,
right
there on the street.
But I've heard insanity like that.
To blame the victims, they want whites are always the oppressors.
See, those white girls should not have acted mean to those
black. They're the oppressors, and the non-whites and blacks, they are the victims. And that's the name that they always try to use, that it's always the victims. The blacks are the victims. The Asians are the victims. The Mexicans are the victims. They're the victims. The whites, they're oppressors. So if a black is trying to rape a white girl, the black is the victim, because he wouldn't be raping the white girl if she would have said, hey, I'll date you. You know, maybe the day before that he had asked her on a date and she said, no, I don't want to date you.
Yeah.
So how, why? Because I'm black. So he tries to rape her the next day.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden that she's the oppressor and the black is the victim. I mean, so they will always make it as if they are the victims. And that's the narrative that they always do every single time.
Well, you know, there's less than 100 people die from a snake bite every year. Less than 100. Yet everybody knows that if you see a snake, back off.
Right.
And yet many, many, many times that white people are killed by blacks every year. The blind should see. If you see black people, back off.
Well, the fact is, you're safer to be around a snake than being around blacks.
Yeah.
You're safer. I'd rather be around some snakes.
Snakes never attempted to
rape. No, no. You want to see how safe you are? Snakes
carry 45.
Right. Go down to Detroit. Go down to every major city, which is basically a third world country. Let's see how safe you are. Chicago, 2,000 people that's been murdered, mm-hmm. you know, and they're all blacks. That's been murdered, I believe, just this year alone.
Yeah.
You know? So the fact is that there are tremendous amount of
when they talk about the rape culture on college campuses, what they're leaving out is the race factor.
Exactly.
You see, and I'm not saying this is like always the case, because you have white girls that go with black guys and so forth, and they just end up in that culture. A lot of times you see grandparents with their black kid, that's because of some white girl at a party that ended up raped, and she can't stand to see that little mulatto kid, you know.
And the church is still, you can't abort that
abortion,
little.
So she ships them off to grandma and grandpa because, you know, she was at a multiracial party, and that's just college campus life, and they want to be there with their friends and stuff like that, not realizing the mentality that these non-whites have for white girls.
Right.
So the rape culture is, in essence, it's a race matter, and the colleges now are, you know, they rarely even report this stuff.
Right.
And they won't report for the most part. You know, we just know from, you know, the statistics we gather and from the input and calls and stuff that we get, but they try to cover up. I mean, it's still, the information's out there if you dig for it. But they try to cover up nationally the race of the perpetrator on all these, you know, campus rapes and off-campus party rapes and things like that. But it's, you know, a dangerous place for white girls.
Well, and even with these statistics, those statistics are a lie, because if it's a Mexican doing a rape, they're going to classify them as white.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so even those type of,
and we're not making that up. That's true.
Yeah. Right. That's the policy with the FBI.
Yeah. Mexicans are classified as Caucasian and white.
People from of Indian descent, like from the country of India and from the Middle East, also are classified as white.
All the person has to do is go to the post office, look at the water post office. It will be in every case, but you see.
Or go online.
You see some guy from Pakistan, from Saudi Arabia, from India. When you look at his picture and say, this guy, no one could pass as a white person ever. And it would say, nationality, Pakistani, race, white. Nationality, India, race, white. Nationality, Saudi Arabian, race, white. They do it over and over and over again.
Right.
So when you hear the statistics of white people committing crimes, those statistics are not even accurate, because they're classified a whole lot of non-white people from third world countries, they're classifying them as white because they're not Negro.
Right.
So they're classifying them as white.
Well, you know, the thing is, it always comes back to race, you know. And the thing is, there is nothing wrong when we as a country, as we as a society, want to maintain our culture, our way of life, our racial integrity. And the United States and all your Western white Christian nations have always been traditionally white countries. The United States was a white country up to 92% white up until the early 70s, you know?
Right.
And so when people say, oh, there's a great melting pot, what? No, it wasn't.
Right. Which, and I forget who it was at the Republican convention. I think it may have been the spokesperson for the NRA, but I could be wrong. But they, when they were talking about America, they said, you know, how great America is. America wasn't based on blood. America wasn't based on religion. America was based on the Constitution and freedom. And I was like, no, no, it wasn't. It was based on blood, and it was based on religion. And then they
But that's probably he was taught.
They made the Constitution. Right. White people. It was based on blood.
Right.
That was the law. You had to be white.
That's why they had laws with segregation. They had Jim Crow laws. That's why they had every territory. You had to be white Christian before you could even be a citizen.
Of course, yeah. Jim Crow laws came out after
the Civil War. No, I know, but that's a representation of the thought. I don't care if it was in the South. That's a representation of the thought.
Well, the North had the North had what was called the Black Codes.
Right.
A free black man could not just... A lot of people think of the North being the free states, and they've had the idea, well, in the North they're free, in the South they're slaves, so North they can do what they want, they can vote, they can marry, they can live wherever they want, they just move about, it was a free state. The only thing that meant is they didn't have slavery.
Right.
But
which
blacks,
meant that more whites had the opportunity to get jobs.
But the point is, blacks could not even move into those states. That's the point people don't realize. A free black man could not move in the state of Michigan unless he paid like a $5,000 bond.
Right.
He could move there, but he had to pay a bond. And all your northern states had a high bond that had to be paid. In all your territories, every single territory up until the Civil War, all those territories that were created, the Dakotas and the Wyoming and Oregon and Arkansas, all the territories, required that a person had to be white, and most of them said had to be a white Christian to even be a citizen of those territories. And so America was built on blood. It was built on a white identity. That's why they moved Indians to reservations. That's why blacks could not become, could not vote in the country except in some small elections.
Little cities, right?
They could not vote in national elections. That's why they had to pass the 13th and 14th Amendment, because it had given them rights that the Constitution did not provide them. So they passed those amendments to provide civil rights to this other class of people that are here who previously did not have those rights. So that's why all this thing. So America was built on blood. It was built on Christianity. But this guy said that he probably doesn't know that. That's probably how he's been taught for 40, 50 years.
Well, he may know it, and he just had to say it because that's the speech
that he's
watching.
Those people aren't necessarily stupid.
Well,
so they know a lot of things that they can't say.
And that's why they passed the immigration, the new Immigration Act in 1965, in order to change it from a white country to a non-white country. I mean, so people say that everyone was welcome to come here, and we were all always been a diversified country. It's just not true. It's just not.
Blatant lie.
Right. Well, and that was part of the communist platform and part of the agenda of the Marxists going way back to the last the last century, the 1900s, was to slowly change all the laws in the country to make, race mixing legal, to make homosexuality legal. They were doing all these, working to change all these social customs and traditions of the United States so that they could destroy Christianity so that then they could take control of the country.
And you basically paraphrase it. I want people to understand that you're just not mouthing off some stuff that you feel. Everything you said is paraphrase what was written in a book Towards Soviet America, written 1932 by, and I can't, the name's slipping my mind right now, but maybe it'll come to me in a minute. But he was the head of the United States Communist Zellner. Party.
Pardon? Zellner.
No, I don't think that's correct. But anyway, Towards Soviet America. And and he lists all these things, give all these, describe all these things that we now have upon our American nation today.
And you see that it's happening, and it has happened. And now Christianity is being destroyed, and now we're becoming a socialist. People don't use the word communist anymore, but, you know, a socialist nation. And
the communists still, Rogers, use a different name, right. Progressives, and or they use the Democratic Party.
Democratic Party.
But the Republican Party is moving toward the same Marxist, too. Cultural Marxism, now with their very slight. They've already accepted miscegenation.
Right.
I mean, that's not an issue anymore.
Yeah. 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, that's not an issue anymore. But now the Republican Party, the so-called, the ones going to save America, now they have opened the door for homosexuals to enter society and be given the nod of acceptance, and they're going to cram that down our throats, and people sit there and listen to Republican Party convention and hear them talk about how this Peter Thiel brags about how being gay, not everybody, but so many people in the audience applauded. So that's why we say our hopes are not in the Republican Party. Our hopes are not even in Donald Trump. But we do say Donald Trump is good for the overall narrative, moving the country direction needs to go. He's good for because of how he's looked upon. Not necessarily about how he is, but how he's looked upon. And if he does build a wall, it does stop some Muslims coming in, that's going to aggravate the situation better and open doors for us to help reach out to our people.
We have about, was it about 10 minutes?
10, 12 minutes.
I think probably about this time we probably need to talk about some issues, or not issues, but activities the Knights are involved in. That's happening because about 10 minutes, and it would go a lot longer than 10 minutes. But there are certain things that is coming up. We're going to the Knights Party, and members can get involved. One is something local here. It's nothing.
It's not national.
It's not national, but
or sponsored.
It's even sponsored, but we have a lot of Knight members and associates that are going to attend.
Members of the Christian Revival Church.
Christian Revival Center, a church. They're attending next Saturday. It's on July 30th, I believe. It's on a Saturday in Harrison at 10 o'clock or 12.
I'm not sure the time.
But it's right around there in the early afternoon.
Yeah, 11 o'clock.
11 o'clock. They are going to have a protest. And Dad, you probably know a little bit more about it. Well, but it's basically these people are... They're about it's a group that's coming to Harrison, going to be on the square, and they're, I guess, helping to organizing the sodomite agenda.
What they're having is it's not on the square, just off the square in the park. They're doing they're raising money for the victims of the homosexual shooting in Orlando, Florida. And so,
but again, the goal is for acceptance. I mean, sure, that's
right. Yeah, that's how they put on the overhelping. Victims, we all should be helping poor little victims. But it's really forced acceptance in a small southern community here in Harrison. And a number of people in the local area, including people from the Christian Revival Center and the Knights Party, are going to be volunteering their participation in this demonstration, which is the demonstration is protect a Christian marriage.
Right.
And that's the demonstration or public statement that's going to be made next Saturday. So that's what that's about. So anyway, pray for our success on that.
Now, I do want to mention the summer Crusader distribution. Crusader is the official newspaper of the Knights Party. I want to remind everybody that if they've not ordered their distribution pack, they need to get their orders in right away. It's $45 for 100 issues of the paper. They can go to KKK.com, Click on the store and then the literature button, and that will take them to the shopping cart so they can order those, or they can give us a call tomorrow at the office and get those ordered. They can mail in a check or money order for the orders, however they, you guys want to do it. But you need to get your distribution pack and get those sent, you know, distributed in your community. If you don't think that you're able to distribute 100 issues of the paper, but you would like someone else to distribute the papers on your behalf, we have many people that do that. They will, because, you know, we're made up of all different people in the night. Some people have the money to get paper. Some people may not, but they're willing to.
For example, Rachel, if someone who's a very successful business person in a community, maybe a medical doctor, or maybe they're a professor at the college or something of that nature, they may not feel they want to jeopardize their career by possibly, and this probably wouldn't happen, but I can still understand their concern, possibly being stopped by police to find out what they're doing while they're distributing Klan papers. So I can understand why a professional may draw back away from doing that. But there's a lot of young kids out here that have a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of excitement. They want to spread this good news. But hey, they're just kids. They're trying to pay the way through college. But they'll be more than happy to distribute papers. Or they may be in trade school. Or they may be working a laboring job. And they'll be more than happy to distribute papers. But there may be young families who don't have a lot of resources. But they'll be happy to get a bundle of papers provided by somebody who is financially able.
And $45 is not that much.
No, people spend that much on a meal. Going out for a couple, three people spend that much on a meal. I don't, but some people do.
Well, the thing is, if you don't want to distribute literature, then please send in a contribution. Send Tyler $45. And if you did the 100 issues of the paper, if you don't want to do it all at one time, you don't have to. Do four or five. Leave them at the post office. Put them in.
Roll them up, and next time make a trip to Nebraska or Illinois. Or
a lot of times you don't even have to throw it out. You can just leave them places. You're going to a business to pick up something.
Leave them in the grocery store.
Leave them there. You know, so there's a lot of ways.
Always mail some to your local media and law enforcement agencies.
The thing is, everybody's got to do their part.
Right.
Everybody, not just some people, everybody has to do something.
Right.
And it may be sending $10 to the Knights. It may be pass out of the paper. But everybody can do something, and everybody should do something, because if you don't, then might as well tell your children and grandchildren goodbye. It's over with. You're not you don't care about them.
I also want to mention that our White Pride Radio billboard on U.S. Highway 65, which is a major thoroughfare from the southern United States up to the Midwest and to Branson, which is a big tourist destination. Our bill is due on that. That's $1,200. So people need to get some money in to help get that bill.
There's a donate button on the homepage here.
Right.
Click that donate button and do your part.
Well, the thing is, again, we're not supported by Fortune 500 companies. We're not supported by major donors or anything like that. We are supported by men and women, families that love this country, who wants to return to the glory days of a white Christian society. And everyone has to do their part, like you said, Dad. And so often people will, you know, even put, you know, $5 or $10, and God bless them if people can do that. But they're, for the most part, people are able to send more than that.
Yeah, every time I see someone spending
much money on cigarettes.
Exactly. Every time I see someone on Facebook showing off their new tattoo or new Harley or their recent vacation or going out to eat somewhere, I don't care if it's just a Applebee's where you know you're spending $50, and I know I haven't seen a $5 bill come in from them in 6 months.
Yeah.
It kind of ticks me off.
Oh, absolutely.
For people.
Like, okay, you're nice people, but what the hell are you doing? You haven't even helped support the billboard.
Right.
And, you know, of course, my pet peeve, people that smoke. I don't, people don't smoke, that's fine. But a pack of cigarettes is $5-$6.
Right.
You know, so the point is, it's all where your priorities at.
Exactly.
You know, and like I jokingly make the statement, but unfortunately, it's not a joke. Everybody wants white victory, but nobody wants to pay for it.
Right.
They want somebody else to pay for it. But with that said and done, I want to add, because we can close, there are a lot of people who do support.
Right.
That's why we're able to have our billboard. That's why we're able to broadcast.
Right.
That's why we're able to put out a newspaper. That's why we're able to have our center over here at the Revival Center. That's why we're able to broadcast the Sunday morning church broadcast. That's why we're able to run our daily program on Wake Up America program and White Resistance News program. That's why we're able to be building and constructing a Christian Revival Research and Development Center. Because a lot is happening here, so we don't want to just moan and groan. A lot is happening here at the center.
What we want to say is that we can do even more.
Right. There's a lot of happening here that is not happening anywhere else in the country. This is, without a doubt, the epic center of the white revival movement in America. There's a huge amount of stuff we're doing. And there's a lot of people who are working here at the center. Just people cutting grass and keeping the lawns good and the grounds good and doing the construction or repair, cleanup or broadcasting, internet, newspaper, selling the paper, just all kinds of
things. And for those people that they're somewhere else in the country, and they're just like, that's good for you. What's that really have to do with me? You know, your grass is cut and you got a nice, retreat there. Well, that's because this is where the media goes. We have interviews lined up every week, all the time, because they come here because we have a message that's important. We have a long-standing history. We are notables in this cause worldwide, and they come here, and we speak on your behalf. So it's always important that this place here looks good, looks sharp, has the resources, so that we can branch out nationwide, worldwide, and so that we can put on a good face for those people that are coming here to learn more. It's crucial. It always has something to do with other people in whatever state or nation they're at.
Right, because the reporters come here, we want to present this idea, this message in the most positive manner as possible. And that's why.
Well, that's why when the media comes here and they are impressed. I mean, they see this.
Well, there's no place else they can go in the country.
No, they see this beautiful campsite. They see the beautiful buildings. They see the water aesthetics and the stream. They see what all the construction that's going on.
The overall.
And they're impressed because there's literally no other organization, racial organization in the United States that they can go to and see the activities, because they don't even have a property. You know, right. They maybe have a presence on the internet and that's it, but Joe Blow down the street can put a presence on the internet.
Right. Joe Blow does.
But they want to see some physical structures. They want to see some activities going on, and there is no other racial organization in the United States except the Knights that are doing it.
Yeah.
And because we have members and associates that are getting behind this awesome organization because they know we are going places. They know we have a plan and a strategy to reclaim America.
And we just want you to be a part of it. We want you to be part of it. We want you to be able to come to our conferences. We want you to bring your kids. We want to give your kids hope. We want to put some life back in the eyes of your teenagers, that there is hope.
Yeah,
there is
young people, teens, get your friends together and make a road trip out here to our conference coming up on Labor Day weekend.
September 2, 3, and 4.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Make plans right now. They can register on the internet. Can't they, Rachel?
Yeah, they just go to the big banner at kkk.com and register.
Absolutely. Do that. Do that now.
Skip the concert you had planned and come out to the conference here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If they really want to get a thrill, that's they will come out here.
Come see Heritage Connection, White Nationalist Band.
Come see Crossline.
Yeah.
Well, anything else for Jason?
Well, we have the European American Heritage Festival coming up on the fourth Saturday in October. Pulaski, Tennessee, a Walk for White Pride. Again, the only place in the United States that there's a Walk for White Pride, and you can peacefully
walk.
And who's
doing it?
Huh?
The Knights Party.
And so again,
I know there's a lot of good white nationalist organization web pages out there, and I don't want to name any of them. And I know there's a lot out there, but outside, when you get off the internet, there's nothing there.
Right.
The Knights Party has a presence on the internet, but we also have the activity. Our members are active throughout the country. We are active here. We're taking the message, and we're not satisfied just having a nice website. We are changing the news on their website every day. You know, the Christian Revival Center, the conferences, Faith and Freedom Conference, the Family Conference, Leadership Conference, the European American Heritage Festival, the daily radio broadcast, the news stories on White Resistance News, and all these things are happening with the Knights because we have membership and supporters who visualize a bright future for this nation.
Absolutely. Well, I think we are all out of time for this week.
All right.
Well, but tomorrow morning you can watch us live at ChristianRevivalCenter.net. Not an official Knights program, but Pastor Rob, Jason, and myself will be there. More of a Bible-based type program, Wake Up America at 7 a.m. You can watch that. And then at 8:30, sometimes at 8:30, depending on our tech mission here, is White Resistance News at whitepridetv.com in our 18th year. So we've been, before a lot of people even knew what the internet was, we've been doing video news and putting out news for our people online. So anyway.
Well, okay. Well,
it's tomorrow.
All right. Well, until next time, it's Thomas Robb.
Jason Robb.
Rachel Pendergraft.
And reminding you to love your God and love your people.